Tillich, and Thomas Aquinas in that order.
Carl Rahner. He'd rather be known as Rahner. He's in the modern
Rahner's
scene.
Carl Rahner, okay.
That's Boltman.
James, we want to spend this particular session talking about some ventures in cooperative theological education. One of those ventures is our experience in Dubuque, and we will begin by having our panelists say a little bit about that. There will be time available for reports from other areas. I'm happy to introduce to you Arthur Cochran, Professor of Systematic Theology at the Duke Theological Seminary. He is our foremost authority on Karl Barth in this area. What may interest you is that recently he became a member of the editorial board of the Journal of Ecumenical Studies. Professor William Wyland needs little introduction in our midst. He is the Paul Tillich, among other things, in our midst. Art Cochran has his PhD from Edinburgh. Bill Wyland has his degree from Erlangen. Father Cletus Wessels has his degree from the University of Ottawa. What interests you, I'm sure, is that he was a member of the AATS Task Force on the Curriculum for the 1970s. So if you don't like what they came forth with, then let them have it while you're here. These people are deeply involved in the things that we're talking about. One can talk about this Association of Theological Faculties in Iowa, at least on three different levels, the administrative or structural level, and the student level. But I think it is particularly significant that at a session like this, we talk about it on the professorial level. So we have our three professors of theology to share with you some of their experiences and hopes. I expect also some disappointment on this ecumenical venture. Bill Wyland is kind of the moderator for the panel, so for the next half hour or so, 20 minutes, it's your program.
There's not really much to moderate. We want to, I think, try to give you a little of our immediate experience of working together in teaching of theology. And Art Cochran is one of the original conceptual minds from which this thing grew, and perhaps the main catalyst in facilitating the initial bringing together Roman Catholics, Presbyterians, and Lutherans, first under clandestine arrangements. And so, since he's already been introduced, Art, we'll let you introduce the subject as you see fit.
Thanks, Bill. Well, I think that ecumenism at the Duke is a pretty unstructured and unprogrammed affair. And it seems to those of us who have sort of experienced it that, like Topsy, we just grew up, you know. And maybe this is the way the Spirit does work. In other words, you can't plan and organize these things and, you know, sit down and say, well, now we're going to do this. But that it's really a growing experience. And I would say that perhaps one of the chief characteristics of genuine ecumenism is a sort of Aizawa encounter, a personal encounter between human beings. So, with that word, maybe I could start at the beginning and how it was just some such encounter as that. I suppose that our relations here in Dubuque dates back to about 1960. I think that's the year that John F. Kennedy was running for election. And there was at that time here at in Aquinas Institute a young professor of speech and drama, Sylvester McNutt. Unfortunately, he has left us and is now in St. Louis, and he is heading up what used to be called, I don't know what it's called now, Peters, the Catholic Homiletical Society.
No, the Christian Preaching Conference.
Christian Preaching Conference, well, I guess they didn't think the people would know what homiletics meant, eh? So they changed it anyway. And there was a chap on the college at the University of Dubuque who was a professor of drama. He met Cletus going up to, or at least met Sylvester going up on the train to Twin Cities. And, of course, they got talking about drama, mutual interests. And then this chap said, I want you to meet a friend of mine, Art Cochran, who teaches systematic at the seminary. So we had dinner over here at Bunker Hill Golf Course. I don't think they don't have a restaurant there now, but they used to in those days. And so that's how I met Sylvester. And I was kidding him. I thought that he was voting for Nixon. And I said, don't you think it's time you got one of your boys in the White House? And thought that he should have voted for Kennedy, you know. And so out of this, of course, grew up a friendship. And I invited him to give three lectures on the campus at the University of Dubuque on Thomas Aquinas. Those lectures were better attended and created greater interest than any other lectures that have been given, any other public lectures that have been given on the campus, I think, of the University of Dubuque before or since, which perhaps indicated the hunger to get to know one another that existed among the students and, of course, faculty alike. And as Bill has just intimated, it was to be very on the QT. There was to be no publicity, no pictures, no notices at all, no reports. And as a consequence, he was, of course, the first priest, I think, that ever visited the campus of the University of Dubuque, and certainly ever to give a lecture. And as a result of that, I was invited to come here to speak on the subject of what Protestant theologians are teaching about the church at a Newman Institute, which was held the following June here at the Aquinas Institute. And then the following fall, that'll be 61, the faculty of the Aquinas Institute invited our faculties, Wartburg and Dubuque Theological Seminary, to engage in dialogue. At that very early time, of course, it was also very quiet. There was to be no publicity, no reports. And I must say that when we talked to one another, we were extremely polite. We never mentioned Mary or infallibility in such obscene subjects. And we just, you know, handled one another with kid gloves. But it wasn't too long until we were able to talk with utter candor and frankness to one another. And our fellowship grew. And as I said, I think the deepest thing of all was is that we came to know one another as brothers in Christ by personal contact. I have an idea myself that oftentimes church union movements and ecumenical movements are rather from, you know, the top down, rather organized and so on. But if I would counsel anyone, the best thing to do is to really to get to know one another as human beings. And, of course, in this process, we came to have a great respect and then developed affection for one another. And so out of this grew, as you know, the Association of Theological Faculties in Iowa, and joint teaching experiences, joint seminars, and now, of course, even sharing of facilities and so forth. I'm not going to speak too long about these things. I rather think that the idea is that maybe some of the things that the three of us may say may prompt questions from you people, because, as I say, it's a rather haphazard affair. But we have not really known in advance where we were going to go in this movement. We don't know yet. But we, as Father Rook said the other day, speaking to a mass meeting of our two student bodies, that we just did those things that seemed right to us. And I think this is the way we're going to keep on going. We don't strive for unity or uniformity or anything like this. But one thing that we do feel that we want to do is not to pursue theological education in isolation from one another. We want to share with one another our deepest convictions, our theological insights, that we may be able to help one another, strengthen one another, and if it be God's will and the leading of the Spirit, to bring us into closer unity in our churches. I think that's a long enough we talk time being.
Okay, thank you, Arthur. I'll just try to give you a brief summary of impressions of, under the title of Performance and Problems. You've already heard briefly of some of the things that we do. You have before you a combined class schedule, which indicates that we follow the same yearly calendar as well as the same daily class schedule. And it's possible for a student at Wartburg, the greatest distance from here, to take class at 8 o'clock at Wartburg, and if he leaves promptly by automobile, to be here for a class at 9. And some of them are doing that this year. You've heard also of the combined summer school that we have. And as an example, the three of us this past summer taught a course on the church in a revolutionary age. We used Hans King's book as the basic textbook and covered a certain section of it each day. One of us would be the leader for that day and make a brief presentation of reaction to, criticism of, and indications for some of the issues of the church today on that section of King. Then the rest of the panel would react to that presentation, often quite determinedly. Arthur and I had some arguments that reflected the difference in backgrounds of understanding between Karl Barth and, as people have indicated, Tillich, which we were trying to represent. But this provided a healthy stimulus for the seminar, which was so large that we had to break it up in individual sections then. And each one of us was involved with one of these sections, and we rotated the sections each week. So we had, and then had a report on the following morning what happened in the sections. We thought it was a very good seminar. It's just a brief example of the kind of thing that goes on not only in the summer but also during the year. Jointly taught courses. Also, Professor Grosskreutz, for example, was on the faculty at the University of Dubuque Theological Seminary, teaching a course in pastoral care. And our professors have been down at Iowa City to teach courses there. This could be elaborated further, but I think it's all given to you in the catalog and in the combined class schedule. Just a couple reactions, then, of my feelings about it. I think the human presence factor is one of the most important realities that comes into being. The different traditions remain abstractions until they are experienced in immediate encounter, as Arthur has said, with other people. And when this happens, as the encounter of the traditions here in Dubuque has happened, the defensiveness of all of us decreases and honesty begins. It's when we quit, padding the statistics, and when we are invited to various meetings of administration and realize the foibles of one another, that we begin to function adequately. And I think that is what is continually happening here. There is the obvious enrichment of professional academic relationships that occurs in encounter with each other. There is the enrichment of personal relationship. And this, I think, is one of the strongest things for the students. We sometimes are disappointed that not as many students avail themselves of the opportunity of taking classes at Aquinas or at Dubuque as could. We have to realize that in our Lutheran tradition, we still prescribe a large portion of the courses that they take, so they are limited in what they can select, since they are limited to electives. But the association that they have with the students here in all levels, I think, is one of the enrichments. You have heard something about the symposiums that occur each year. You have evidence here of the common planning and catalog, and Cletus Wessels, I think, will tell you something more about the advances that are projected in regard to that, of common curriculum planning. For example, this past year, Father Wessels and myself sat in on the curriculum committee meetings of the Dubuque Theological Seminary as they were planning a revised curriculum. And we were invited to give our criticisms, and we're not just innocent bystanders, but participated in the interdisciplinary debates and discussions which exist in any faculty. And I think we're enriched by it, and that's what I mean when I say that when the defenses go down, the human presence factor is one of the important realities. Well, we don't want to make it a complete success story. There are problems, and the greatest problem that I see is the administrative constipation which has resulted in this association. Maybe Schick might want to talk to that, or Jensen. I remember Dr. Jensen, in his term as acting president, saying and coming back from one of the meetings of the directors of the association that he never saw such a defeated group. They didn't know what to do, and they all looked despondent, and if one would look at that, it would seem like this association was a dead duck. It was then that I realized very keenly that here the phenomenological reality far outstripped the ontological discussion and experience of what we were to be. In other words, we had not in any way administrated this thing first, and that's why I suppose we have administrative difficulties. But this is one of the things that seems to be a problem. Not a problem, but a different factor occurs now in that Dubuque Theological Seminary is sharing facilities and is in closer proximity with Aquinas here than Wartburg is. And so we are now engaged in this period in our in development to see whether this thing so nobly advanced as a trinity will continue, you know, as successfully that way with the closer association that now exists between Dubuque and Aquinas. I see no reason why it would not. And one of the other problems, I suppose, is to be able to coordinate your personal ecclesiastical responsibilities and restrictions with what you may think and probably could do locally if you didn't have to pay any attention to those things. I think they're important considerations and need to be taken account of, as they are by all three of us. But sometimes this inhibits some of the advances that one might be able to achieve otherwise. These are just a couple of factors that I see as problems at the present time. There are many more of how to involve more student participation in actual classes, because there are students yet today who will say, I can't even begin to take all the electives at Wartburg, and I'd like to hear my men first before coming to Aquinas. There's a measure of that, I suppose, that all of us experience. But there is another side to that, that, for example, our students are able to take as an elective or required course of the Catholic student over here, which is quite an experience for him. And some of the performance and problems then. Cletus maybe will want to give you some of the projections.
I'd like to begin my remarks by recalling a sermon that Father Kevin O'Rourke preached last Sunday here in our chapel. It kind of concretized and verbalized something that we have thought but never quite said so explicitly, and he was speaking principally in terms of the sharing of facilities, but I think it goes much broader than that. And he said that we should not conceive the Dubuque Theological Seminary as coming here and renting space from the Dominicans. That this building and all of these facilities were really given to us by the people. The people of God are those who have given us this building. And really, we have it only in trust. And our responsibility is to make sure that what has been given to us by the people of God is used for the welfare of the people of God. So that in sharing facilities with Dubuque Theological Seminary, we are doing no more than just carrying out the trust that has been given to us. And it seems to me that this is the attitude, the underlying attitude, which we have all had in working in Dubuque, that we're not here to defend our own
little province of whether it be Lutheran, Presbyterian, or Catholic, or to defend our institutional integrity at all costs. But rather, we're here as three schools who have been given a trust by God's people to carry out a particular mission. And we're trying to use our financial, our physical, and our personnel resources in the best possible way to serve these people. And it seems to me then that as we project to the future, this has to be one of our underlying principles. As we look to the future, as Bill mentioned, one of the questions is the Wartburg campus, 2 miles away, which has excellent facilities. I think what we have to ask is not how can Wartburg protect its facilities and grow as Wartburg, period, but how can Wartburg, Aquinas, and Dubuque use these total facilities which they have received in trust to serve God's people. And if we can do this better by a realigning of facilities, of doing various types of cooperative use, then I think this has to be a major consideration for us. So I think the one point I want to make is that we are there's this growing awareness of our responsibility, not only to our particular church body, but to God's people as a whole, because I think we all realize that no one of us has the strengths, the insights, the resources to handle the major problems facing society today. We've just got to work together and put all of our strengths at the service people of God as a whole. The second point that I would like to make is that some of the problems we have experienced perhaps point the way to the future. One problem Bill alluded to was the problem of having our students become more and more involved in ecumenism at the personal level. There's very little interest among students for a course in ecumenical theology. For that matter, I think Wartburg offered a course not too long ago in ecumenical theology, which no one enrolled in. Nobody enrolled in it. Because to sit down, you know, and kind of hash over those old ecumenical problems, they're beyond that. The students don't have any interest in that anymore. They want to go ahead and start theologizing in a common effort. And so what we have to do, and what I fear we haven't fully done, is provided the opportunities for students to become more directly involved on a personal basis in this work of theologizing. And it has to start, as Art pointed out, with personal friendships. So one of our hopes is, we tried last Tuesday night, I think rather successfully, to have an all-school party out on the back 40 here.
Beer party, that is.
A beer party, which was rather well attended. They asked for a dollar donation, and there were enough pre-party interest that $108 was collected. And we have a marvelous place out there for a beer party because there isn't a house within a block, and so noise and so forth doesn't disturb anyone. But this is merely an example of the type of thing that gets students to know each other. And once they know each other, they begin to grapple with these problems. I think a second thing that I look to in the future is we have no real concept of what this is going to mean. For example, I can imagine 5 years from now in a small town in Iowa that the Lutheran, Catholic, and Presbyterian pastors may well have been trained here in Dubuque and have attended a number of beer parties together as students, have sat in on the same courses in many places, and here they end up in the same little town in Iowa. What's going to happen in that little town?
They all get kicked out if they have beer together in the town.
So what we really haven't, I think, considered seriously enough is the people. Here we're going along our merry ecumenical way. But what's going on out in the parishes? Are we training men for frustration who are going to come out with this fire of ecumenical fervor and run smack into the rubber wall, I think, rather than a brick wall, of apathy and doubt and distrust on the part of the ordinary people? And I think we in the faculties here have become concerned that we try to bring the parishes and the lay groups in the surrounding area more and more into what we're trying to do here. And I think, for example, the Wartburg attempt to develop a continuing education center may be a move in this direction, to get more parochial clergy, get more lay groups involved in the efforts that we are finding so successful and so helpful. This is another direction. One final and third point that I want to make, which perhaps shows my bias as a Catholic, I feel that we have not as yet done adequate work in the field of worship and liturgy. It is very easy, in a sense, to sit and talk about theology. But where I always find the thing gets kind of tough is when the question of worship comes up. Because for some reason or another, whether we admit it or not, it's when you reach that focal point of the Christian community gathering for worship, and particularly for the Eucharist, that the real faith and our real depth of our Christian life comes to the fore. And until we're ready to begin to face that, not merely speculatively, but very practically, we are not going to fulfill in the future our full function in our cooperative efforts. I don't think I have to, you know, stress this with a Lutheran group that has gone through recent meetings and discussions concerning intercommunion. You know as well as I do the meaning of these particular problems and their crucialness in the life of the church. And so one of the things that I miss, for example, is the opportunity to worship together with some of my very close friends on the other faculties. I have any idea how we can go about this, because I think one of the things that we have been very sensitive here is to our church politics. That none of us wants to get ahead of the church body as a whole. We don't want to run off and have joint communion services. But yet somehow we've got to face this question squarely. Our students are getting ahead of us in some areas, and it's time that we became more cognizant and perhaps begin, insofar as our faith allows, to worship together in the hope that someday we might share the fullness of our Christian life and worship together. Those are my remarks.
Thank you. I think rather than, as we ordinarily would do, respond to each other, we'll open it to questions to you. Let you enter the discussion. While you're thinking of it, yes.
Father Cletus, your last comments answered one of my questions, and that was, are there any opportunities for joint worship in this consortium? Another question is, what has the relationship been to your parent bodies? I know that in St. Louis, if we were to broach this kind of arrangement, we certainly would have to do it together with our Board for Theological Education. And I would like to know what the relationship has been over against each of your superiors or governing bodies or parent churches or what have you.
Cletus, you want to speak first for the Catholics?
Yes. As I mentioned, I think that one of the reasons that we have been able to move as rapidly as we have is way back in 1961, when we began these discussions, we went directly to the Archbishop, who was Archbishop Binns at that time, and got his permission, sent him full reports of discussions, so that our whole operation was always carried out with the full knowledge of ecclesiastical superiors. And I think that by doing this, they began to develop a certain trust in what we were doing, that we were responsible people who were not out to try to destroy our own church body. We're not trying to minimize, compromise, and so forth. So I think that this was one reason at the beginning. There is, at the present time, a certain amount of difficulty because there are no guidelines published for Catholic seminaries. And when we wanted to share facilities with Dubuque Seminary, we first went to the Archbishop, and he said, it's all right if your Dominican provincial will approve. And we went to him, and he said, it's all right if the council of the province approves. So we went to them, and they said, it's all right if Rome approves. So we finally had to go all the way to Rome to ask their permission, and they said, it's all right as long as you don't do such and so, and put a few Roman hedges on it, which really don't affect us at all, but give them an out in case something goes wrong. Then they've got they can say, you should have done what we said. So I think that at least my own feeling has been work within the ecclesiastical structure, but be constantly bumping it. You know, don't let it restrict you in the sense that it stops you from imagining the future and pushing them. Because I found with ecclesiastical superiors that by their very nature, they have to be a conservative element. And yet, on the other hand, they kind of like to be bumped a little. And if you push them a little, my experience is that they will, if they have a certain trust in you, allow you to do many things. So we've tried to work with them. But on the other hand, we've never tried to hide what we really thought and really wanted to do, and we haven't had a great deal of difficulty.
We have done the same thing, I guess you would say, of consultation all the way through, reporting to our Board of Regents and to the Board of Theological Education, and the Constitution of the Articles of Incorporation being approved by the American Lutheran Church. And there is an out for our ecclesiastical body also, in that this is an association of theological faculties. See, it isn't a seminary. And so this means that it's an association of the faculties of the seminary, so this provides a kind of an administrative stopgap for our ecclesiastical body, too, if we go too far. And I think the people from the Board of Regents and administrators here will know that I suppose we're doing the same thing as pushing a little for various things. But I think we've had a fine relationship with the administrative arm of our church in recognizing this. Sometimes I personally wish they would see the uniqueness more clearly of the opportunities in Dubuque for the encounter of the traditions and not simply view us as a seminary in the same line as the other seminaries in the American Lutheran Church. But that's a personal opinion.
We haven't, in our Dubuque Theological Seminary, haven't had difficulties with our church authorities. Our seminaries in the United Presbyterian Church in the USA grant the seminaries considerable freedom, and we're not so. We have some financial support from the church, but we have considerable latitude. Where our difficulty was, and I hope that some of these remarks that I'm making now will not be quoted, I notice I'm being taken down here, but she'll use discretion, was with the board of directors. That is to say that in planning our cooperative work with Aquinas and with Wartburg, and particularly in the purchase of the property adjacent here where we hope to erect a joint library, and also the move over here did encounter considerable resistance. But our faculty was absolutely unanimous in believing that this was the direction which we should go, our seminary should go. And we had to do a considerable job of educating the board of directors. There was strong fear that we were going to be taken in by the Roman Catholics. Maybe their fear is still latent, now that we're over here, that we've been taken in by them. I suspect there are those who feel this way. But Fortunately, the spirit also prevailed in the board, and the board voted unanimously that we make this move to come over here and share facilities with the Aquinas Institute. And the papers, the contract was formally signed last Tuesday, wasn't it? And there were no dissenting votes. But I just don't want you to think that it was all smooth sailing. There was there were years of struggle, and we had to keep at it, and our faculty did keep at it, and fortunately we were united, and we were well represented in the courts of the board of directors. Bill was talking about some of the problems that lie in the future. I will give you share another one, and that is, I think, which of course is the problem that faces all seminaries across the country, and that is the question of financial support. And I think here we're going to need to do a similar job of educating the laity of our church, and having them come to experience somehow firsthand the sort of thing that we have experienced here and which we prize so highly. I think that this is going to be probably one of our main problems in the future. And also, I think that in nearly every group that I've spoken to, I think we have to disabuse their minds of false conceptions of what ecumenism means. A lot of them think immediately that it's either the Catholics are taking in the Protestants or the Protestants are taking the Catholics in, or something like this, or that there's going to be a result in differentism in matters of faith, or that there's going to be compromise in matters of doctrine. Well, this is just absolutely not true. In some respects, it may be that our various positions are becoming firmer. We're at least and have experienced, I think, the richness of our own traditions, and that it is not some political move that is involved here. But I do feel that a great deal of public relations work in this area has to be done.
I think you might also say that it doesn't necessarily follow the argument, you know, that if you cooperate together, that you're going to be able to save money. Probably means the other way around. Association's always talking about it needs an administrative head, director. I don't know whether that's the greatest need or not. One of the dreams I have, and I think one of the most urgent needs, would be to be able to have the financial resources to have a professor to the association, a named person, you know, whom we could have come here for a term at a time. That's one of the things we've sort of looked forward to, who would be. I think those are the kind of places where you need to spend some extra money in the association. You certainly can lop off a lot of courses. When we made this catalog, we discovered how much fluff each of us have. And this was a good exercise, a painful exercise, and coming to grips with the reality of publishing a lot of things that you have listed there, hundreds of courses that taught once every 10 years or so. You can do away with a lot of those things, and maybe there can be some genuine economy in departments of not having the same person. We're thinking of hoping to have a person in the church and society, and it wouldn't make sense for all three of us to have one. There are some areas there. Yes?
I would like to get to this item of worship. And let me start by saying that I was an ecumenical guest at the Pontifical Biblical Institute 3 years ago. And one of the first questions I asked Father McKenzie is whether I, as a Lutheran, could join them in their worship. The answer was negative. Now, there's a certain element of disappointment there, but at the same time, this may be one way in which we can continue to increase the eschatological tension and say to ourselves, well, there are certain things we're going to leave for heaven. The present generation wants everything now. So why not use this particular device instead of creating a problem and say, well, yeah, we have different understandings, but just wait for heaven and we'll worship together. Seems to me it can be made very constructive rather than negative.
Jack Rowan?
This worldly question is about curriculum.
Yes.
As I listen to you and look at the catalog, are a required course in your present structure. And then beyond that, have you given any thought, has there been any experimenting about setting up a combined core curriculum?
Yes.
Students would choose whether they want to take New Testament introduction from a Lutheran, a Calvinist, or a Roman Catholic.
There is an exception possibility in registrations for a student to meet a course. Like, I can give you an example. It isn't a rule, it's an exception. A guy comes, starts in the middle of the term, and he's out of line with the sequence of required courses at Wartburg, and needs a course in preaching. We have allowed him to take a course at one of the other institutions here to fill that, but no regular advertised thing. We did have last year a required course taught together by the three seminaries. So, and there has been planning of along the line of curriculum, taking into account possibilities of it being worked out together. There's a problem there. I would say that the experience in the required history course we had last year was not an outstanding success, because what probably was set up wrongly, it might be of value to some of you doing the same thing. And that was, it was set up in such a way that a major portion of the course consisted of all the students from the three seminaries in this particular course in church history being together, and then lectures to be given by the various professors. Well, that kind of a big arrangement really defeats the purpose. They should be split into smaller groups, and the idea of bringing people together for a big lecture is not in any way, I think, a wise economy of time and talent in this dimension. So efforts have been made to develop a common curriculum, required subjects, but we're a long ways from fulfilling that.
I'd just like to comment from this point of view that there are cases, and once again, this is by way of exception, depending upon the man's maturity and so forth, where we will allow our students to take some of their basic courses in Bible at the other schools. One of our third-year students is taking his, they have to take a course, for example, in St. Paul, at least one course in St. Paul, and he is fulfilling his requirement at Wartburg this semester in that particular field. And also, there was a very strong move to do something common in the basic introduction to the Old and New Testament, which hit a few snags, but I don't think is dead. And I think that Dubuque is very interested in working towards a higher number of electives and even allowing the core to be common. I would say that this is an area which is something to be discussed and worked out very much in the future. But our experience is that team-taught things and a lot of things like this history joint thing just may not be the answer. It may not be the answer.
About core hands, and I'm also conscious of the thing on my wrist. We have made provision for reports from other areas, and if we continue this discussion much longer, those reports will go down the drain.
We did more of this beginning than we're doing now. In other words, when we first started, there was monthly meetings of our three faculties and discussion of not only theological issues, but also of our teaching methods and curriculum and so on. And it got a little bit too much for us, and so what we've been doing now is to having a sort of a conference of our three faculties once a year for a whole day. But I think that some of these things that we've just been talking about, I foresee. I'm always very reluctant to talk about what we're going to do because, as I said, I don't think we should run ahead of the Holy Spirit. But I foresee, for instance, a joint faculty meetings will be almost inevitable. And that, for instance, now, sometimes we make mistakes. A couple of times why, for instance, one of our seminaries has gone ahead, our seminary has gone ahead, and hasn't always consulted with the other two. We're going to avoid that. For instance, even in the choosing of personnel for faculty, I don't think we'll do this alone. I think that we will at least consult one another. For instance, if we need new professors in certain areas, well, one school may have this professor and vice versa. I think that there will be, it's inevitable from now on in that there will be much more, and we have been so close together that we do know a good deal what one another are doing, even at the national level. For instance, I am on the consultation of Reformed and Roman Catholic conversations, and so is Father Kiesling, and Father Thomas was before him, and I think some of you men are with the Lutheran, so that we do know what one another are doing, too, and what they're writing, of course, and publishing, and so forth.
Also, there's we started last year, last spring, monthly colloquiums for the faculties and doctoral students, and we voted at the last common joint meeting of all the faculties that we would continue this year, and they're starting at the end of the month, and then perhaps if you want to expand on it, we do have departmental meetings or divisional meetings, and the Department of Bible has been the most regular at this and had very regular meetings even to do such things as to have jointly translate books of the Bible together and discuss its meaning and so on. So it's done more on an individual initiative and smaller group basis, I think, than putting up a sign, faculty meeting Tuesday night. I think I've discussed more in Art's basement than I have in a faculty meeting.
Now, gentlemen, what's your wish? We terminate this part of discussion and permit very brief, and you'll have to be very brief, report from other areas or continue this discussion and forget about the other report. You want the other report? All right. Then in 10 minutes or so, let's have four different reports. Kyle Meyer, I believe you were asked to have a few minutes on some information you had about St. Louis. Now, shall we then dismiss the panel with honor and with gratitude?